the show.
Well, hey everyone, and welcome to this week's show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson. Good show for you today. We're going to handle an inbox question from a girl who sees a guy in passing, says hello, but wants to know if there's anything additional she can do to perhaps attract his attention and or interest. The guys at the table are grimacing. So we're going to go ahead and help her for our inbox segment. And then our culture segment today is an interview with Rebecca St. James. And you know that I blogged on the fact that she is now engaged back when it happened. And I was able to talk with her by phone and get the full scoop on that, as well as the info on her latest album. So make sure you check that out. But here we are for today's roundtable. We are going to talk about singleness in different stages of life, and you all know about this already because you submitted your questions to us as we are going to address them on this week's show. And we got a ton of questions. Martha, craziness.
I was really impressed on Facebook and the blog.
Yeah. So you all spoke and we listened. We have them printed out here. We're going to try to tackle as many of them as we can. And so let's go ahead and jump right in. I want to just go around the table quickly and introduce our guests. Go ahead. In fact, I'll let you introduce yourselves. Just say your name and your age, and then we'll move along.
Hi, my name is Lee Mays. I'm 42 years old.
I'm Andrew Hess, and I am 30.
I'm Nathan Pyle, and I'm 28.
And I'm Martha Krinke, and I'm 28.
And I'm Lisa Anderson, and I am 39. Devastating. No, it's okay. I'm hopeful. I'm optimistic. Still in the 30s, hanging in there. So, okay. Well, good. So we obviously have different perspectives, different ages, different backgrounds, and I'm sure those will be reflected as we wander through these questions. And we're going to try to do them as rapid fire as possible so we can tackle many of them. And Martha graciously divided them into categories for us, which is great. So it seemed like there was a common theme that we're going to start with about dealing with singleness and being single as it relates to other people and other people's comments, other people's impressions, other people's gaffes as they try to talk to us about singleness. So the first question I want to throw out is obviously from one of our listeners, and it says, how do you deal with married people who just don't get it? And this is the people that give the platitudes. You know, as soon as you get things right with God, then I'm sure God's going to reward you with a husband or a wife. And they kind of imply that until we are strong enough Christians, we won't be rewarded with marriage. So who wants to jump in?
Well, I think that as I hear that, I weigh that against two things. One is they might be right. It's possible that, you know, as singles, that there are things in our lives that, you know, that we need to work on or that we need to work through. I would say that's probably not the majority of people. And so to kind of generalize that isn't fair. But so initially, I might actually assess myself and say, okay, are the things in my life that yeah, I need to work on or I need to improve on. But secondly, I would say that, you know, if somebody says that to me, oh, well, you just need to get things square, get things right, and then God will reward you with marriage. I don't know if I think of marriage as a reward or as, I mean, I think it is definitely a blessing, but I don't know that it's something where God's like, okay, once you get to this level of spirituality, then I'm going to give it to you. You know, I mean, God has given marriage to a lot of people who are at all different places spiritually, and it has been a benefit and detriment to all kinds. So to say that marriage is kind of this reward is probably myopic. And so to that, I would probably, you know, I just kind of respond and say, you know, you need to be careful kind of saying that because you don't know. For some, singleness will be what God has for them. And so you're not behind if you're not married yet.
Yeah, there's definitely an element of not knowing the heart of the Father when you start to attribute singleness to punishment or marriage to blessing. Mm-hmm. That's just not who God is. That's not who He is. And I think the thing that's happening here is this person is not wanting to really, truly engage who you are. It's really easy to say that and throw it back on you rather than walking with you in your life and hearing your heart and hearing what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, I would also like to point out that I think most people say this with good intentions. They don't want you to feel bad. And so they, you know, they try to give some kind of reason for maybe why you're single, even if you don't want to be, or they want to issue some kind of hope to you. And so I think there are good intentions, but I often just kind of say, you know what? Messed up people get married all the time. And so I think that's a little bit of a smokescreen, a little bit crazy to just kind of throw that out there. And sometimes I use humor to do it, and I think it helps. So, All right, well, let's go ahead and address this next question. How do you express to others that you would like to be married and would appreciate their prayers in this area without coming across as desperate or not content in your current state?
When I heard this question, I automatically put it into the job context of if I was looking for a job, I would certainly go talk to the people that I know and just make those different connections. So I don't think that is showing that you're not content or that you're desperate. It's using your resources. And I've actually emailed a lot of friends before and say, who do you know in their upper 20s, early 30s, or whatever that you could set me up with? Or even some friends and I put together a prayer card of, is a picture of all of us, five single ladies, you know, waiting for God's timing. And we sent it out to some really good friends and they're praying for us. So I don't see any shame in doing that.
I think there's an element of not looking desperate. I think it's okay to desire it, but if it's something that you're holding out your happiness or your joy and you're portraying that to other people, then that's not attractive. It's like always swimming with someone who can't swim. You know, throw me a life preserver, throw me a life preserver. You know, you're just like, okay, I get it, you can't swim, you know.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, I think the just, like Martha said, putting it out there is excellent and making that known, but constantly probably belaboring the point, whining about, right, you know, oh my goodness, and all the guys are just crazy and whatever. That's not going to help anyone. Okay, what is the proper perspective and loving response to parents who put increasing pressure on the fact that I'm getting older and not dating?
I've kind of there in one time in my life where parents were, they were looking to me to kind of carry on the last name of the family, you know. So I get this pressure from father, like, oh, and we'd really like to have children sometime this century. And it gets to the point where it's just aggravating after a while. And so the proper response I say to them is that I see myself in a different place right now. I want to make sure I can be able to provide. I want to make sure I'm growing as a leader, as a spiritual leader. So when I do meet that woman, I'll be able to lead us spiritually in the right way through our lives. And when I get married and have children, I'll be able to be mature enough to know when my children come to me with questions about spiritual questions that I've done the research, I've answered my own questions, and I'll be able to answer theirs. So I say I'm looking way down ahead to make sure I'm prepared before that woman even enters my life. And I think that's a big part of how I answer. And they seem to respond to that pretty well, and they seem to take that as a good answer.
What about, here we have one listener that said, when you are 33 plus years of age and want to marry and have biological kids, how do you respond to comments such as, oh, you have time, don't rush it, and if God wants you to have kids, you will have kids?
Those are certainly true statements, but it kind of misses you. You know, again, it's those kind of answers that just kind of put things off, rather than identifying with what you're actually feeling and needing, you know, they just push you away.
Okay, what about this person who says, reactions to my singleness that should be positive can cut to the heart even more than negative ones. I can dismiss the negative ones much more easily because the lie is obvious. If it's true that I'm such a great person, though, then why am I single?
I had a friend who got that a lot of, what, you're not married? That's unbelievable. And I always wished I got that comment more. I don't know. She was maybe just more outgoing that she got it, but so it's interesting that this person saw that as a negative.
Yeah, I mean, I think when people point it out, anytime they point out that you're single, and especially if you're around a bunch of people that are married, it can be a little bit of a, you can take it as a jab, even if they're positive. I remember one time I was at a birthday party and I had brought this cake, and like a bunch of the women there tasted it and they were like, how are you still single? and I mean, I kind of like just jokingly thought about it, but I mean, here like 5 years later, I still remember it. So, I can kind of resonate with that question. And I think, it is one of those things where in our culture, you know, there is that stigma and we feel it. And so we really have to kind of fight for, okay, I understand, you know, how I think about my life and where I am and where I'm headed. And to really think in terms of, you know, I don't want to perceive myself based on my, you know, singleness or things like that. And so we do have to fight to keep our minds, you know, on the way we really ought to be thinking and the trajectory of our lives, and that, you know, single or married, we're all striving to serve the Lord as well as possible, and that, you know, some of us will do that well as singles and some of us will do that better if we get married, but that the eye is on that. And if we keep our focus on that, a lot of times these comments don't hit us as hard because we recognize, okay, I'm actively pursuing the Lord and pursuing what He has in my life. And so the sting, at least for me, when I feel that, I start to think about, okay, what are the things that I'm doing in my life that are active, that I'm actively chasing what I see the Lord calling me to? And that tends to kind of refocus me. And so a lot of these comments we've been talking about, they kind of lose their sting a little bit.
Mm-hmm. I think also when it comes to social interaction, it's generally surface scratching. It's a lot of platitudes. So when someone says, oh, you're a great guy, I don't know why you're single, they don't really know me. So they may have known me for 5 minutes or so and just said that. And I remember when I was younger, a girl told me that, and I asked her out, and she said, well, I don't want to go out with you. So it's like, I can't believe that nobody wants to date you. So, and then I say, why don't you date me? Well, I can't. So I kind of caught her on that. And I thought that was funny later, but at the time it hurts because it's kind of a platitude to say that. And on the flip side, people that do know you're a great person, they are genuinely wondering why you may still be single, because they see what kind of character you have. And they ask those questions, but in the same way, they can't really answer it. So they're just trying to make you feel good. And it seems like a positive comment, but it might cut you a little deeper than you may realize.
Mm-hmm. I think most people are generally kind and don't mean to be mean. And especially if they're married, especially if they have a good marriage. They're like, this is great for us. We wish, and in some ways they're like, we want this for you. So it's not a mean thing. It's just like, wow, come join the party or something. Mm-hmm. There's an element of that.
Yeah. It reminds me of that clip in the movie, He's Just Not That Into You, where those two women are sitting there and they talk about all the things that they've been dished, like from guys as far as like different rejections and stuff. And they said, when the guy knows that, or how that the guy's going to dump you, and he's like, you're too good for me. You're just too, and she's like, really? If I'm too good for you, then how come, and it's kind of the same mm-hmm. thing of like, how come you're not married? Because you're so amazing. Well, how come you haven't asked me out? So, okay, that, Nathan, your comment segues into our next question. And I want to hear from the guys first on this. How do you deal with rejection?
I think it is hard. And I think as guys, we tend to not process it. We tend to just kind of put it inside and we do with our other guy friends, just kind of say, oh, well, she must have some issue or something. And we kind of jokingly say that, but over time, if we don't deal with that, it can really kind of affect your heart, and you can be really closed off to people. And almost the thing that I think that we need to do is to kind of process, it's okay, that there are going to be times in life where things don't work. And that, we kind of live our lives with our hands open and saying, Lord, bring good things into my life. And, and I think that, I've seen a lot of times in my life where, that I might have pursued a certain person and it kind of fell apart and there was some pain there. But over time, I kind of looked back and saw, I think the Lord knew what He was doing there. And so, and you want to be careful with that because you could turn that into, oh, she didn't deserve me, anyway. Mm-hmm. And that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that, we always want to let the Lord veto the directions we run. We are prone to look at the wrong things and to run after people for the wrong things and to pursue for the wrong reasons. And so, I regularly pray, Lord, if this isn't a good fit or if this isn't going to work out, break it off earlier than later. Just to guard her heart and to guard my heart. I'm not a big fan of like dating a long time to see if it'll work. I mean, I think I would much rather the Lord, kind of show us early on if that's the case. So
mm-hmm. There's a couple different kinds of rejection. I think there's the short relationship rejection, and in those situations, they haven't really gotten the opportunity to know you, so how can they reject you? It's not like it's a deep core thing. It's just kind of a surface thing. So, if they knew me, they'd love me. It's just that kind of a deal. But it gets harder when you get deeper into a relationship and they do get to know you. But then there are other elements that are at work there as well. The other person, their stuff, where they're coming from.
Yeah, that's a good point that Lee brings up, because when it's early on, to me, I don't process it because it doesn't feel like rejection to me. It just felt like timing was off. they weren't really in a place where they wanted a relationship. Whereas later, a few months in or something, and suddenly you're rejected. I've been there too. And that stings a lot deeper because that is a rejection. And that's something that causes you to be introspective and say, what did I do to cause this? And then you start going off on rabbit trails on things that you could have done better to preserve it. And you really have to step back and say, you have to look back at it and say, this might have been unhealthy from the start. Maybe this was unhealthy from the start, and this is exactly what God wanted it, where it wanted it to go.
There's an element of what you're saying that, you know, do you need to be married or do you want to be married? Because if you need to be married, then that's a whole different ball game, and there's some stuff you need to look at. If you want to be married, then that's different. You know what I'm saying? That if you need to get married, then you're putting too much, way too much on the relationship, on the person. It's not fair to them. You know, and it's not going to build a good foundation for a relationship.
Yeah, well, I think there's a difference, yeah, between getting to an end goal that doesn't have a face attached to it and just being obsessed with that, and then recognizing, okay, well, I really am called to marriage, so I need to move towards that as a goal, but you know, to make it about the person, I think that's huge.
I was in a relationship at one point, and I changed my Facebook status to say in a relationship, but it's complicated, and there's two girls that defriended me. And it made me mad because I was just like, wait a minute, why is it? The only thing that changed was the status, and they're no longer my friend. It's like they wanted something from me, and when they couldn't get it, then there was no longer a relationship. Mm-hmm. Like, that's baloney, you know?
They just wanted you to uncomplicate it, apparently.
Yeah, so. I was, yeah. Yeah.
That's what it sounds like, it was just above their heads.
Because I wasn't their option for the knight in shining armor, then all of a sudden I wasn't an option at all.
Okay. I think for women, it's much more difficult to, even on these short-term relationships, just get over something or cast it off quickly. I think women tend to take things extremely personally. And of course, you know, after the first coffee date, we often are at risk of envisioning a future with the person. And that's really where we we tend to go and have some questionable behaviors, I think, out of that. But I think it's helpful. You know, I've kind of had... for women, it's weird because we're not really putting it out there and risking. So, but you could have someone that you're interested in, you feel like you're giving signals and just nothing happens, which also you can play off as the, well, they're obviously just a jerk or they're idiot, you know, an idiot, and they don't know how great it's I true. Am and stuff. So we'll often tell ourselves stuff like that. And women are very good at helping other women, not look at the facts and not look at reality by saying, well, you're so amazing, I can't even believe why he wouldn't want to go out with you, when meanwhile you know that that person has very real things that they probably could address, and you should be much more honest with them about it, you know. But we want to just make ladies feel good. And so I think that's kind of where our error comes into play. But I will speak briefly to the being rejected at a deeper level, having dated someone who actually proposed and didn't work out and stuff. And I don't think there's anything wrong with doing some counseling after that. So, I mean, there are very real, like, wounds that, you know, things can bring up, relationships or whatever. And don't be afraid to, whether it's a pastor or a counselor at your church or a professional counselor, to go and just work out some stuff. Because, you know, you can easily say, well, obviously I have all these things wrong with me that made me unworthy of love, and you know, it can just drive to a lot of deeper things. And so you definitely need time and healing for that kind of stuff, and getting objective feedback in there I think could be helpful as well. So
mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's an important point, Lisa. I mean I have several close guy friends in my life that, you know, probably once a month I kind of say, you know, what are the things that you see that I may be working on, and I push them to be honest. And sometimes, I mean, that's not fun to hear, but I do think that, you know, we can be prone to see our own highlight reel and not the things that, you know, might be scaring people away. You know, I mean, all of us have been around people who, you know, we kind of all know, like, you kind of in your mind think like, oh my gosh, like train wreck, you know. And you know, I mean, I'm thinking of guys, none of you girls, but you know, you think of the guys and you're like, oh man, like he's got some major issues. But a lot of times he wouldn't agree if you pointed it out and said, you know, you need to work on this. A lot of times, especially as guys, we don't see it. Mm-hmm. And so that's been kind of a strategy thing, to have guy friends that I'm like, okay, what are the things that you see in my personality, my character, the way I come across? You know, please feel free to call me on those things. And, you know, I don't look forward to those conversations, but I can't work on them if I don't know. So,
Yeah, I think that speaks so much to Jesus's character too, because he always led with grace and he followed with truth. So when you ask your friends about their opinions on something, they always start with grace. You know, they open it up in a friendly way because they do care about you, but they also need to come to you with truth. And I'm reminded of the Samaritan woman at the well. Jesus came to her, was very gracious toward her, and then he called her out that she wasn't married, living with someone, had five husbands before that. So I think that's something we as friends need to do too, is lead with grace, keep people that are close to us, let them know we love them, but also be very truthful and honest, heartfelt with them when they ask for our advice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think I'd like to just throw out there as a general principle, I think I've said this on the blog before too, but guys that write to us and say, I have asked 10 women or 15 women out this month and every one of them has turned me down. If that is the case, I would say that it may be you. that's a high statistic. And so really that's where I would say go to a brother in Christ that you trust or an older guy in your church or whatever and just say, hey, you know, what would be your assessment of why this is the case? Mm-hmm. Ladies, same thing. If you are in a sphere of a good number of single men, they are asking other people out and they are not asking you out for like a period of 6 months, go and talk to someone and say, what is it about me? Am I standoffish? Am I coming across as bitter? Am I nitpicky? Am I just fading into the woodwork too much? I think that people can provide some good feedback on that for us. So that's good. Mm. All right. How do you maintain hope for marriage after years and years of disappointments?
One of the things I don't do is watch sappy movies because that just gets really depressing. I mean, you watch those movies and everything clicks together and you think about your life and you're like, wow, that is about as far from my experience as possible. And I mean, I still can watch those and not, you know, be depressed. But I think that we base our hope in what God's doing in our life, and we recognize that, you know, one of the things that I think it's easy to do is to feel like, you know, we're behind, or that, you know, God has forgotten about us, or he's not hearing our prayers, or there's some disconnect there. And I think that when we look at the scripture, God uses difficult times to make us more like Christ. You know, of all of us around the table, God's goal for us is more that we would look like Jesus tomorrow than that we would, you know, be happy in a relationship. You know, and I think that he does want us to be happy, but mostly he wants us to be happy in him, and he wants us to grow in him. And so we need to recognize that, you know, marriage is a good gift. You know, I actually just did a buddy's wedding this weekend, and I talked about, you know, that passage in Genesis where God had provided everything Adam needed up until the point where he made Eve, and then he provided again. He recognized it's not good for Adam to be alone, and he made Eve. Adam didn't have to bring it up. He made him. And so God is a provider, and marriage is part of his providence. And so we have to recognize that he's, you know, he's intimately aware of our lives. He knows our heart's cry, and that, you know, he's looking for opportunities to provide. And so I kind of rest my hope in that, you know, Lord, you know. And another thing that I do is I regularly pray that, Lord, if I can be more effective for your kingdom single, then let it be. And that's a tough prayer. You know, that is a prayer that I wrestle to pray because I want to get married. But I recognize that it's more important for my life long term that I'm effective for his kingdom, that I'm using the gifts that he's given me as adequately as I possibly can. And I think if I chase those gifts and chase the opportunities that he's giving, then when I need a helpmate to do that even better, he's going to bring that person into my life. And so the focus isn't on the helpmate. The focus is on the task. And the more, like, when you get to a point where you're biting off so much where it's like, man, you really need somebody to be cooking your meals because you're so busy serving me, then, you know, it'll be, yeah, that's my strategy. I don't know if it's theologically sound, but.
So how do you reconcile that with understanding, okay, as I'm serving God, he'll let me know when I'm supposed to take on a help me with the idea that men are called to step out and pursue mm-hmm. marriage. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're right. That is something that we have to weigh because we are the initiators, and so we are kind of if we want to get married, then we need to be proactive. But I think that also, I mean, the Lord is very good at bringing people into our lives. I mean, I've seen it in so many of my friends that have gotten married. I mean, it's almost like they kind of smacked both of them across the head and said, hey, guess what? You guys are going to be married. And so, and I'm not saying we have to wait for that, But I think that as a single man, if I don't feel like I'm called to singleness, I should be pursuing marriage in some way. That, you know, that there isn't, and this is kind of one of my pet peeves when I talk to young men, is that, you know, they kind of feel like, oh, well, I'm in a time of just waiting, like for the next 3 or 4 years. And these are men that are out of college and are just kind of getting their careers together and just feel like I'm just in a pause mode. I'm not looking. I'm not kind of looking around to see who the Lord's bringing to my life. I'm just kind of in neutral. And I just feel like unless you feel like God has called you specifically to that, that you should be in drive. Like you should be looking, you should be pursuing, you should be preparing. And so that's just kind of, as I look at the scriptures, I see God often calls people to singleness, you know, and gives them the gift of singleness. And Paul says, you know, I wish everybody was single because of how much they could achieve for the kingdom. But he also said, if you burn with a desire, you know, for sex or for a relationship, you know, then get married. You know, that's not a sin. And so kind of, I think that, you know, Paul is interesting on this topic because he was living the single life and he obviously had that gift and saw that, man, I could do so much more as a single man than I could if I was to be married. Mm-hmm. And that was probably was part of the culture and the time.
Yeah.
But I think that's the question to ask there, Lisa, is to say, you know, Lord, I'm going to chase the things that you have me to do. And when I can be more effective for your kingdom married, then bring that woman into my life.
Yeah. So much of feeling content has to do with your perspective. So your perspective can really build you up or it can drown you. For instance, when you're single and you go out in public and you're lonely and bitter about it, then all you notice are the couples. But if you're part of that couple and you go out in public, you don't sit around and go, look at all the single people around here, because that's not where your mindset is. So you have to be able to be content with where you are and where God has you at that time. And I think the rest of it comes a lot easier. I know for me, once I shifted over from being bitter about it to understanding there were reasons why I was single and I could still do lots of great things, that was a big shift for me in my perspective. That was huge.
What should I do in the meantime if I feel called to be a homemaker and mother? I've never been career-oriented, and those are the only jobs I've ever aspired to. I just turned 30, and I'm not sure how to proceed in the corporate world with no real desire to be here.
Well, that question reminds me of just some advice that my mom gave me about do the next thing. That might be your desire and hope down the road, but where am I right now and do the next thing? For me, there came a point where I was able to buy a house, and being there now, I can be somewhat of a homemaker of decorating and nesting and having that kind of outlet. With my job, I wasn't looking for a job when Boundless came along, but it came there and it was do the next thing of go ahead and apply and then do the interview. And it's just taking that one step at a time and not just, I guess, being depressed and that it's not what you had pictured, but trusting that God has that under control and being responsible with what he's given you now.
That's good. Okay. What advice would you give a single male wanting marriage but afraid of becoming a statistic of divorce?
It's not worth rushing it. I mean, I know people who are desperate and got married and have ended marriage miserably, are still miserable. It's just not worth getting into or rushing.
Yeah, I agree. I would tell that young person to be careful, but at the same time, you know, to continue to just use wisdom, to ask the Lord for wisdom. I think that most of us, I think what the person, you know, who's thinking in that line thinks that, what if I marry the wrong person and that person causes a divorce? And we often don't think about, you know, what if I'm not ready? And so I think, yeah, just asking, James says, you know, ask the Lord for wisdom and he'll give it. And I think that, you know, more and more, it is easy to forget what the Lord's purpose is in marriage. You know, as we have, you know, those of us who have, you know, friends and family members who have gone through divorce, I think that it is easy for us to think, I hope that never happens to me, or what if that happened to me, and to recognize that that is definitely something you want to watch for in the character of the person that you're pursuing, in as far as, you know, assessing that, like, is this a person that is committed? How do they handle when I hurt them? You know, I think that's a huge thing to watch when you're dating and engagement, is when you hurt them, does it take them a day to get over it? Or does it take them a couple minutes? Like, are they able to offer you grace quickly? because that's the type of person who, you know, that's a good way to divorce-proof a marriage, is to just to be grace-filled yourself and to find somebody who's grace-filled. And if you find somebody who, you know, holds grudges and, you know, can't let things go, and I'm talking about little things. I mean, I know there are big deal breakers that, you know, that you should end things over. But a pastor friend of mine said, you know, everybody looks like the big buzz is on compatibility and looking at all these personality traits and compatibility. And he says the thing you should be looking for is somebody who's full of grace, who treats their friends with grace, who treats their family with grace, who can absorb being hurt, and it doesn't rock the whole relationship. So, and I think that's a capacity that I try to grow in. And
Good. Okay. Yeah, I think a little plug for next week's show as well. We're going to talk about breaking the cycle of divorce with Dr. John Trent. So make sure you check that out as well. He had some really good things to say to us when we taped that one. So, all right, what does the dating scene look like at your age? I know God isn't bound by odds, but I imagine that the number of singles decreases until a certain age, at which point it begins to increase again to death and divorce. I'm holding out hope that the nursing home dating scene is going to be hopping.
Can't you picture that?
Yeah, exactly.
I'd say quickly, at 42, that it seems like everything speeds up. Like you go out with a person, all of a sudden one date means eight dates. It's like you've dated eight times, you know, and then there's so much more expectation the older you get that maybe this is the one, and then it just speeds so fast, and you just got to say, whoa, wait a minute. Just, you know, got to slow down things.
Suddenly dating's like dog years.
Yeah, exactly. Seriously.
Yeah.
Nice. What about you guys, younger guys? What's it look like out there?
It's hard to say because it's so much of depending on who I'm going to date depends on the situation. Is she alone? Does she look approachable? And there's very few scenarios where I feel like that's really an open option. And you go through so many things in your head where you're like, okay, well, there's a girl and she's in the grocery store. She's by herself. Doesn't have a ring on. Check. You know, you go through this checklist. And then you think, but she's not really smiling. She's not really, doesn't look that pleasant. Hasn't smiled at me. So my glimpses of the dating scene really have to do with very small public areas, because once you get out of college, it really shrinks. It really shrinks a lot. You have the workplace, you have your church, and then a lot of times in church, it's a lot of couples. And again, that goes back to perspective too, because you see couples and you think, oh, well, my hopes are lost here because everybody here is already together. So I don't have the best idea of the 20-something dating culture, because it changes even in the 20s. Once you hit 25 on versus 20 to 25, it's completely different. And I just feel like it drops off. So I don't feel very well versed at this age at 28 to handle it. I really don't.
Yeah, I think, I mean, one of the things that I try to do is to keep things really light early on, you know, kind of to Lee's point. It is easy, you know, when you have two people who are, you know, both interested in getting married soon, it is easy to kind of like speed things up or escalate things or to let the relationship move faster than it really should. And so I try to intentionally like lead in that way and say, you know, here's how I envision a relationship moving. And those beginning stages, to do things that are really fun and to avoid, you know, sitting and talking for like five straight hours, you know, about, you know, deep things. I mean, even though I enjoy doing that, I think that is part of, you know, taking it slow. Is a lot of people don't think like that. They're like, oh, I just want to, you know, become friends. And so I want to talk about, you know, deep things in my heart and all that kind of stuff. And I think we need to be careful to keep it light, you know, to do fun stuff where you just enjoy experiences together and kind of get to know each other slowly. Because when you have two people that are kind of excited about where things are going, it is really easy to just like become magnets and sometimes that works. You know, I have friends who have gotten married after, you know, months of dating and, you know, are doing really well. And so that is the way sometimes, but I think it's foolish for us to seek that out or to think that's going to be the way it happens for us necessarily.
Okay. All right. Well, we have to wrap up here for this week's show. We'll have to go ahead and do another session, another episode of this, so we can get to the rest of everyone's questions. And we will go ahead and do that. But I want to thank you all for being part of this today, for weighing in. Thank you so much, everyone. And thank you, everyone out there, for submitting your questions. Like I said, there are more here on our sheet. So we will go ahead and address those on a future episode of The Boundless Show. So thanks, everyone. Whatever the storm, whatever is love. everyone. For this week's culture segment, I have Rebecca St. James on the phone. Rebecca, welcome.
Thank you so much.
Hey, so exciting to hear from you again.
Thank you.
Okay, so first of all, I'm sure everyone is saying this, but I have to say it. Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
And let's be honest. Okay, some people saying it, it's just okay. But when you hear that from the Boundless Show, it actually means something, okay? Because we are all about moving people towards marriage in a healthy and biblical way. And we are so excited for you that it is happening. And Jacob, right?
Yes, that's right.
Okay. Now, are you like between Southern California and still, are you still bopping around or where are you now?
I'm actually in Nashville, back in Nashville for a couple of days. You know, I lived here up until 2.5 years ago, but I'm based out of L.A. now and spend a lot of time there. Yeah, and actually that's where I met my fiance.
Well, yeah, that's why. Okay, so because you had moved there because of the movie, because of Sarah's Choice. So you kind of got into the scene down there. And
yep.
Well, look at that. That was a good career move. So do the movie and meet your husband.
Yes, definitely major God thing, you know. Like, and it's actually pretty cool thinking about it now. You know, after like seeing this whole journey unfold, you know, seeing that God moved me from Australia to the U.S., you know, to Nashville, and then from Nashville with all my family, you know, left there to California, and really a very out of comfort zone kind of move. But, you know, he had this purpose in mind and knew my husband was there and that how we would meet, and it's just very, very beautiful.
Oh, it's just great. And we, you know, I did a blog post as soon as we heard the news and
I
just
saw
got
that. I
flooded
saw that.
With
Thank
comments.
Thank you so much for that. It was such a lovely write-up. Oh. I was really blessed by it.
Well, it was so much fun, especially we girls. We have to cheer for one another,
exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
We're rooting for each other, and whenever we see one of us get there, we have to collectively cheer.
Oh,
so everyone said,
you're
such an inspiration, and, you know, I'm a lot of girls, you know, in their late 20s and early 30s now who are just like, you know, I've grown up with Rebecca and I'm holding on and I'm still praying. And so
Wonderful.
your success and your joy is ours as well.
Thank you so much.
It's just awesome. So now you do have to tell me, because, you know, we had you here with Evie as well.
Yes.
When you were here back in the day. Is she going to sing in your wedding or what is she doing?
Actually, the only sad part about the date that we have is that her daughter, and it's her first child to have a baby, is having a baby that exact time, so she can't travel at that point because she obviously needs to be there for her first grandchild to be born, and so she's there in spirit singing away.
Maybe she will have to just Skype in or something.
Exactly, and she'll be around before the wedding to help me prepare, and just she's the most wonderful support and mentor, and so I feel all her love and support, absolutely.
Well, that's awesome. So,
yep.
So in the midst of all this, you are still writing and recording music.
Yes.
The latest album, I Will Praise You, just coming out very soon in April. And very exciting. I was listening to this last night on the way home from work and had a lot of fun. First of all, with the title track. I mean,
it is kind of fun. It's got a bit of a dance vibe. Yeah,
it does. It has a little bit of a dance vibe. And of course, you know, there are definite, I know you've said that this album is your most kind of personal one as far as a worship album to date. And of course, that is reflected in the title track, because as soon as you hear it, you're just like, okay, here is God. He has a plan for us. We don't always know what it is, but he will reveal it in his time, and we need to wait on him and trust him.
It's totally true.
And so it is totally true, and it's exciting to see, because a lot of times we have to do that blindly. You know, it's very Hebrews 11. You know, sometimes we don't always see the promise in the time that we think we will and stuff, but the growing and the learning and the faith is evidenced in that period of waiting and in that period of trusting. And so
definitely.
So that's really awesome. Now, I understand you did co-write like about half the songs on the album, right?
That's right.
So where was that all birthed out of? Like, what did you just sit down and say, okay, I'm having these experiences, so I'm going to start writing?
You know, I'm kind of an intentional writer. I want to be able to sing from a very real place. So when I have an album coming up, you know, I'm like praying, God, give me the right songs and the right messages. So really the things that I wrote about on the album were like the kindness of God, just realizing that it's his love and his kindness and his gentleness to us that really draws us to that love relationship with him. And, you know, it's a very biblical idea. It's your kindness that leads us to repentance. And another song on the album is a worship song, but it also is about self-image and about God redeeming pain in our lives. And then you were just talking about I Will Praise You. You know, and that one is saying, look, whatever the cost, you know, whatever the storm, whatever is lost, I'm going to praise you in the middle of it. Kind of like, you know, that blessed be your name, Lord. No matter what happens, I'll bless your name. And on the single level, actually, there's a little bit of a story to that title track because, you know, that song for me is powerful as a single, you know, like woman, I really struggled with being single and the loneliness and the challenge of that when I really wanted to be married. And I felt years ago that God called me to actually let go of my dream of being married and trust him that if he didn't plan for me to have somebody, you know, that I would marry, that I could still trust his heart for me and his love for me. That he, if that was his plan for me, knew some reason that it would be better for me not to be married. And even if I didn't know what that was, I had to trust his heart. So I kind of grieved for 2 days, you know, just really letting go of that and just saying, God, you know, I trust you, you know, I will praise you no matter what. So that song for me is really symbolic of kind of letting go and trusting God's heart, and even ties into, you know, the singleness that was a lot longer of a period in my life than I could have ever known what it would be and hoped that it, you know, wouldn't be that way. But the trust that he taught me in that time is very profound. And the relationship that he fostered in me during that time is very profound.
Right. Because I think it's a delicate balance. You know, we tell women here on the show that there is no shame in putting your desires before the Lord.
Yeah,
and in
absolutely.
Saying, I feel called to marriage, God, and this is where I am, and this is what it looks like.
Yeah, being present to your dream,
exactly.
Like being present to your heart, but still saying, no matter what happens, God, I praise you and I abandon my will to yours. It's a balance.
Exactly. And to recognize that he is always working out our story, and he knows entirely, you know, he's on either side of us and in front of us in that, and to recognize that, yeah, we can truly rest in him. And sometimes he just gets totally jazzed about the fact that we're asking and the fact that we are trusting and the fact that we are coming to him with open hands and saying,
and
God,
he can handle it. He can handle our pain. Yeah,
exactly. So that's amazing. So what's going to happen now with this worship album? I mean, obviously releasing here now in the spring, just coming up.
Yeah.
But are you going to be, how are you fitting all this in with wedding plans? And
my album comes out, you know, beginning of April, and then not too far after that, I'm getting married. So it's there's a lot going on. You know, I'm learning how to kind of delegate responsibilities for the wedding and hand off details to other people. But, you know, I'll be on the road, you know, some doing shows, but really my heart is to be a helpmate to my future husband and to be, like, with him in his calling, you know, and he'll be able to come to some shows of mine, and we'll be able to kind of be back and forth and be together the majority of the time. I would really love to request people's prayers for us as we navigate that, because we really want wisdom.
Exactly. So, well, good. It has been a privilege to chat with you, even if briefly, Rebecca. So excited for you, excited
Thank
for
you.
The wedding, excited for the new album. Again, that is called I Will Praise You. Look for it. And hopefully we will, you know, get the full scoop. You're going to have to somehow, you know, include us post wedding in the celebration. We'll look for pictures and we'll stalk you online and all that kind of stuff. And then, don't forget, I have already talked to your team there, and the two of you need to come out here and tell your story to the Boundless Show.
I would love that.
When you guys
love it.
Come
We've
to Colorado Springs, because we need to hear the full
details.
Scoop. Both sides.
All those girl details, yep.
Exactly. So, well, a huge privilege, Rebecca, and the Lord bless you as you move towards marriage, and especially with the album coming out and just all the excitement around that. And thanks for being there for us, producing these songs that really are an encouragement to so many.
Thank you. Well, and thank you for your blog and to all the listeners too, and people that wrote in and were so lovely and encouraging and were really, you know, truly sharing their joy for us. It was a blessing to me. So thank you very much for that.
Thanks.
In my weakness you can shine. In your strength.
Hey everyone, we are opening up this week's inbox and I have Candace on the phone. Candace, welcome.
Lisa, I have a cold, so I'm practicing my really deep radio voice today.
That's good. That's good. That is very professional. So.
Oh, good. I'm glad you think so.
And it sounds very wise for dispensing advice.
Oh, good.
So that's good. We're looking forward to hearing from you. So this is going to be a good question, so I'm going to jump right into it.
Okay.
It's from a female, and she is saying, I have never had a boyfriend. I just graduated from university, am 22, and am loving the life I've lived and am currently living. Now that I am at an age where being in a relationship and pursuing marriage is an option, I have a question. What do I do with an attractive guy I run into at least once a week when I'm pretty sure he thinks I'm interesting and or attractive? I know he's a Christian and that he's a nice guy, but that's about it. I like thinking that if the guy likes me enough, he'll initiate getting to know me better, but running into this one all the time is starting to feel incredibly strained. Do I just let the situation ride itself out, or do I owe him some encouragement? If encouragement's the best option, what does this look like practically?
Well, I think practically, you have to get quickly past the issue of attraction. He's attractive, you're attractive. Wouldn't it be nice to be attractive too? She says that if he likes her enough, then maybe he'll initiate. So I think her job is to give him something to like other than just her looks.
Mm-hmm.
And the way to do that is just to be kind and ask him questions. So she says, I know he's a Christian. Well, my first question would be, how do you know?
Yeah.
And based on how she answers that, I would encourage her to ask him questions related to that. So, for example, if he graduated from the same college and it was a Christian university, then you could ask him about that. If you've seen him or some of his friends at church, you could ask him, you know, hey, where do you go to church? Did I see you Sunday? Or I think the danger is to keep it at a real flirty level where you're feeling the sparks of feeling like he thinks you're attractive and you think he's attractive, because that's very surfacey. And yes, it's nice to a point, you know, you think we'd look good together, but that really isn't going to get you to the goal, which is a God-honoring, mutually sanctifying marriage. And so you've got to get past the attractive issue, the attraction issue, and get into the substance of his character. And the best way that I can think to do that is consistent with being biblically feminine is to ask him questions.
Yeah. And don't you think she has to guard against kind of the opposite, which may be, I mean, I'm kind of getting the vibe of, is she just like smiling and then dashing off? Or,
yeah,
you know,
exactly.
It kind of makes me wonder, you know, because I think guys can kind of pick up on that too and say, wow, it looks like, you know, somehow she ends up in my sphere all the time, but it seems like she always scurries away or doesn't
right.
have anything to say, or I don't know anything about her because it looks like she possibly isn't interested in getting to know me.
Yeah. And, you know, she says that they have the how are you today conversation.
Mm-hmm.
It's important to take that then to the second question. Don't just let it be that. You know, ask something of substance. So we seem to see each other here all the time. How come you're always here? Or, you know, where do you come from? Why? You know, what are you doing before you come here? I don't know. Just start to get into, pretend that this is a woman that you see everywhere and you talk to. You know, I think about women that I repeatedly run into, say, at the library or the grocery store. After the second or third time, I almost always strike up a conversation, and it's just very friendly.
Right.
And, you know, as much as possible, just have that friendly approach, because then that takes out all the nervousness and all the anxiety of, oh, you know, maybe this could, the hijinks of maybe this could go to marriage. You know, that's too high of a standard for the early stages of, hi, my
yeah.
name is Candace, you know, where do you go to church? That kind of a thing.
Right. And I think that brings up a good point, and that is this girl putting all of her eggs in this one basket? I mean, if this whole little, you know, hey, smile, say something is going on for a year or whatever, you know,
yeah.
At some point this guy has to say mm-hmm. something or whatever, and she needs to not put all her hopes in something working out with this guy, because
well,
honestly,
because the reality is typically this sort of thing doesn't go anywhere.
Yeah.
I think it's the exception for something like this to turn into a deep and meaningful relationship.
Right.
So, but knowing that...
Hey, I'm still waiting for this, Candace. I am waiting, you know, there's a guy that I see at the gas station that I'm sure that sometime in 2017 it's going to turn into something.
Right, right. And that's why I'm praying for you, Lisa.
Okay. I think you might have to add fasting at this point.
Just a little reality dose to help burst that bubble of, you know, the dream world.
Right.
And I don't mean that in a cruel way at all. Just a sense of, be kind and ask some questions and get to know enough about him to know, is there anything there?
Right, exactly. All right, well, that's good. Good advice. So okay. Hopefully she will take that and we'll see what happens. If you do, if you're out there and something does happen, please write to us, editor@boundless.org, and let us know. Give us an update. So, all right. Well, thanks, Candace.
Hey, you're welcome. It's always a pleasure to talk to you on the phone, Lisa.
Okay. Well, that is it for this week's show. As always, we want to hear from you. Write to us at editor@boundless.org so we can take your questions and answer them on a future show, whether it's Candace or one of our counselors or someone else weighing in with some great advice. So that is it for this week. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson, for The Boundless Show.
The Boundless Show is a production of boundless.org. Focus on the family.